When you post hunting photos on Instagram, they get censored. When you post on Go Wild, you get virtual fist bumps from fellow hunters. When you buy gear on Amazon, you gas up a billionaire spaceship. When you buy gear on Go Wild, we donate to a camp that teaches kids to hunt, fish, and shoot. See the difference? Go Wild is a free social community built by hunters for hunters. Join today at downloadgowild.com and I'll give you 10 bucks just for setting up your account. And you'll keep unlocking Go Wild rewards as you share content because guess what? We like hunting pictures. Join at downloadgowild.com or in the App Store.
Welcome to the Backcountry Rookies podcast, Stories from the Season series. As the hunting season progresses, I like to bring on some of my friends and former guests or just people with great hunting adventures to share their story. This year, we teamed up with the Western Hunter Magazine to bring you the Stories from the Season series. Western Hunter Magazine has established itself as a valuable and reliable resource for its readers, with in-depth and thoughtful articles covering the latest in Western hunting news, tactics, gear, and of course, great hunting stories. The bi-monthly magazine is aimed to educate and connect with those who share a passion for hunting Western big game. From rookies hunting the West to seasoned veterans, Western Hunter Magazine works hard to ensure that every issue has something for everyone. Get the magazine for as little as $20. Check out their subscription offerings on the website at westernhunter.net or in the link in the podcast description. I hope you enjoy. Let's get right into one of these great stories. Hey, welcome back to the Backcountry Rookies Stories from the Season podcast. So I got a really cool story to talk about today. I got Jordan Staley on, and we're going to talk about hunting in the Gila National Forest, which is always an awesome topic. So last year we did a good story on hunting in the Gila, and it was a fantastic hunt. And I've been keeping in touch with Jordan quite a bit since antelope season and my deer hunt and stuff. Jordan and I talked back and forth quite a bit, and he had a Gila bull tag. So I decided to bring him on because I really like talking about the Gila. One of these days I'll draw that tag of my own. Anyway, can't wait to talk about it. Can't wait for you guys to hear about it. So quick word from the sponsors, and when we come back, we'll be on with Jordan Staley.
This podcast is sponsored by Go Hunt, Elk 101's University of Elk Hunting, and Vortex Optics. Check out Go Hunt Maps for all your scouting needs. Go Hunt Maps comes free with an insider account and offers amazing 3D maps on your desktop for e-scouting, and the new mobile maps on your mobile device. Now you have all of the resources of Insider, filtering 2.0, strategy articles, draw odds, and more that you use for application season, and it's all paired with maps used for e-scouting and hunting. Insider is the all-inclusive tool for Western hunters. Use the promo code ROOKIES and get $50 in Go Hunt Gear Shop credit when you become an Insider today.
Elk 101's University of Elk Hunting. University of Elk Hunting provides you with immediate access to the most comprehensive and complete resource for increasing your elk hunting knowledge, confidence, and success. University of Elk Hunting now has all of those resources in the palm of your hand on a mobile app. Use the code ROOKIES and save $20 on your University of Elk Hunting membership today. Vortex Optics. Have you seen the new Vortex Razor UHD 10x50s. If you haven't seen the 10x50s, I highly recommend checking them out, going to the local store, doing whatever you can to check them out. I was blown away at how bright those things were. I recently took them on a deer scouting / bear hunting trip out here in New Mexico and was very, very surprised. The clarity of them was great. Edge-to-edge clarity was great. And what I was really surprised with, I've never used a set of 10x50s, but what I was most surprised with was that brightness at low light. Just having that bigger objective lens draws in more light, makes them brighter, which means you can glass longer. Check out those Razor UHD 10x50s, and I would suggest check them out at the Go Hunt Gear Shop. So there you go. Go Hunt and Vortex Optics got together, got a pair of 10x50s. Check them out. Jordan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm glad we finally made it work.
Yeah, right. Well, we've tried a couple times here and there, and
I'm just glad to finally be able to get you on. I didn't know if I wanted to have you on to talk about that badass antelope that you shot. And then out of the blue, I get pictures and here's this giant bull that gets shot. So I knew exactly which one I wanted to talk about.
It's been a good year for sure.
Yeah.
Better than all of my other seasons. This has been the best season of my life so far. So yeah, everything's just been coming together.
Yeah. And that was a great antelope. So congratulations on that one. I mean, we could talk about that, but.
We deposit and say, yeah, I mean, I probably wouldn't have found that spot if we hadn't been chatting back and forth, you know.
Yeah. We got to give Vince all the credit.
Oh, and Vince. Yeah. Our buddy Vince.
Yeah.
He's like my new best buddy because he found me a Booner antelope.
He is my new best buddy. I love Vince. I need to get Vince on here. Did you see that stud? Well, you guys shot a Barbary sheep too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Your dad shot a Barb sheep.
My dad did.
Jesus, yeah, you have had a good Vince, year.
We both had that hunt at the same time. He was up in a different spot, but yeah, he killed a really big ram. Ours was really nice too. His was old dinosaur of a ram though.
Yeah,
his really is a big cool old pictures, scout. Really cool spot.
Yeah, cool. I'm gonna get him on.
That kill shot video he had was really nice. I don't know if he sent it to me, I think. Yeah. But yeah, it's Barbary sheep. That's a whole, you could spend 2 hours talking about those hunts. They're pretty wild.
I've got one coming up, talking with another buddy about one, and then I think I'm gonna get Vince on too, because I really want to hear. I told him, he called me one day on the phone. I was like, hey man, I want to tell you the story. I said, don't freaking talk about it, dude. I don't want to know it yet. We'll talk about it.
That's what anyway, he did to me too at that.
Exactly. So that's what I did to you. Anyway, sorry, we digressed there a little bit and went off on a tangent. I brought you on here to talk about that badass bull elk that you shot up in the Gila. Why don't you tell the story on that? Because it wasn't like one of those super easy, hey, we're cruising around on the road and we shot it off the road kind of a hunts. You guys spent some time out there, and I want to hear about it and I want to share it with the listeners.
Oh, absolutely not. It was tough. It was the second hunt too. In probably what a lot of people would say is one of the best units in the country, right?
Yeah. Without a doubt.
So we kind of have to rewind to last year. I got really lucky and I drew a unit one Arizona elk tag, archery elk tag. And I hunted I killed him on the ninth day of that hunt. And this bull just came screaming and just flew in. Didn't give me a chance to really think about it. If I would have had my wits about me, I probably would have known a little bit better. But I shot this bull broadside at 30 yards and I was just, oh yeah, he's a good bull. And I walk over there and he's barely a 6x6. So,
which is still a good bull.
Oh yeah. No,
but a unit one Arizona 6x6 is different than like a,
but you know, it's kind of like what we're talking about with the Gila right now. I saw a ton of elk, but I probably saw two bulls that were 350 or better. And I hunted hard for 9 or 10 days. Yeah. Can't remember which day I killed him on. So moving forward, when I found out I drew this tag this year, which I just couldn't believe it. I just knew I wasn't going to hunt elk this year because I'd been really fortunate in the draws. But I decided right then that I wasn't going to let that happen again. I wasn't going to shoot a bull that just came running in that got my heart thumping. You know, I was going to pay attention to his fronts and his back end and make sure he was a bull that I wanted. Anyways, we spent a decent amount of time scouting over the summer. We made it out a few weekends, put up some cameras. My buddy Kevin went out with me and we glassed up some really nice bulls. I actually had an Idaho hunt this year and over the counter. And I ate that tag because I saw one of those really nice Gila bulls. And I decided I'd rather have a really nice Gila bull than, you know, an Idaho bull and a so-so New Mexico bull. I didn't want to split my time and spread myself thin. I wanted to dedicate my time to the Gila. So season rolls around. And by the way, my dad has the tag too. So we both drew on the same application. So that added another element of I need to get my dad a bull. He'd never shot one with his bow before. So I wanted to do that for him. He actually hadn't killed an animal for himself since 2001. He's always been either on my brother's hunt or my hunt. And he always said, no, I've killed a bunch of deer and a bunch of elk. I'm good. But I wanted to get him an archery bull. So we pull up to camp, and kind of like you'd expect that a lot of people dream about the Gila, the elk were screaming at camp, you know, 100 yards, 200 yards all around us. There was probably five bulls going nuts all night long. So we hunted from camp the first morning. That really wasn't even the plan, but we have a motto that is don't leave elk to find elk.
Yeah. So it's a great motto.
I've done it before. That's why I have it as a motto now. Cause I have left elk and gone to a spot that I was my pre-planned, like part of my hunt plan, and got skunked.
Yeah.
So we hunted right there. I think we only had to walk about half a mile before we were really in some bulls. And it was me and my dad and my buddy Kevin. And we had decided my dad was going to shoot first. And we were going to try our best to get him a bull. So we go up this canyon, and there's two bulls, and it sounds like they're getting close to each other, and they're probably fighting over some cows, you know, getting a little pecking order down. And the one bull sounded like he got pretty close to us. We were just cow calling every now and then. I think I might have bugled twice, you know, nothing too crazy. They were going enough on their own that we just kind of moved with them. And that bull got close to us. So I figured we could probably give him a few calls and get him to come close. So me and Kevin backed up, and I let out like four or five cow calls, just little sweet ones. And that bull ran right to my dad, like 45 yards, and he missed. Shot right under him. Yeah. And what he had said was that bull came running. He watched him run across a clearing to him, went in between two trees that he had ranged. The first one was 38 yards and the one behind that was 50. And he thought he was pretty close to that first tree. So he shot him for 40, but he was probably more like 45 or 47. He was closer to that back tree. And he shoots a 55 pound bow.
You know, there's some arc on that arrow.
Yeah. It probably went right under his chest.
Yeah.
So that bull walked by me and Kevin on the other hillside, and I didn't see him. I just saw his butt go behind some trees, but Kevin saw his back end, and he said he was a big bull. I never did see that bull completely, but we guessed he was probably like 340.
Wow.
You know, 330 plus for sure.
Just a little guy.
Just a little guy.
Yeah.
So what do we think? We're like, oh, you know, no big deal. That was right off the bat opening morning. This is like 8:30. You know, if that, this is going to be an awesome hunt. We're going to have so many chances.
Yeah. Right.
We're going to see so many bulls. We're going to call in a bunch of bulls. And the next 5 days was a big struggle, big time. They didn't want to bugle very late into the morning. Probably 8:30, 9 o'clock was the latest. They moved off from calls. You know, you couldn't be too aggressive with calls. They didn't like calling too much. Evenings were awful. They wouldn't go on their own at all. You had to get right up on top of them and cow call or bugle or something like that just to get them to answer. So it was a lot of that, you know, to make a long story short. It was a lot of like halfway decent opportunities, but not what you dream of when you think of the Gila, right?
Yeah.
You know, everybody thinks that you get there and they're just going nuts all day, every day. And
so what were you guys doing to get them to talk to you? Or were you just pushing hard in the morning and the evening and that was it?
I'm the kind of guy that I like to get up and just walk a ridge or somewhere that where I can be hidden where they can't see me, and I'll, depending on what it feels like, I'll either cow call or bugle to try to get them to answer. And I got that new, that Phelps metal tube. Dude, that thing is sweet.
Really?
Oh man.
I've seen it. It looks sweet. I haven't tried one, but
I like that. I really liked the big old, I can't remember what the model of the big one is, like Unleashed or something like that. The big plastic one. The metal tube, when I got it, I was like, oh man, it's small. It's probably not going to be as loud. No, dude, that thing is like ear piercing, high ringy notes. It sounds awesome.
Is it light?
It weighs about as much as that big tube, I'd say. It's okay. It's not a,
yeah.
The only thing I didn't like about it is it didn't come with a lanyard. That was my only criticism. Huh. And I actually sent him a message about that. I was like, was this supposed to come with, you know, a lanyard to like hang around my neck? And they're like, no, it doesn't come with it. But that's my only criticism of it. Other than that, it's, you know, it has a nice sleeve on it, so it doesn't clank around. But yeah, if you hit that high locator bugle note with that thing and there's something around, they'll answer.
Huh.
But yeah, I just get to a high point or somewhere where it feels elky and I just call if they're not doing it on their own. If they are, I let them do their thing. I don't want to introduce too many variables into it if they're just ripping on their own.
Yeah, right.
Unfortunately, that didn't happen very often this year. So we did have to kind of force some things. We did, you know, going back to wanting to get a bull that was better than that bull last year, that, you know, I wasn't just emotionally like, okay, there he is, boom, let it go, and then kind of be somewhat disappointed when you walk up on him. We did pass several, you know, little sixes and fives, and I got a lot better at that. So that was definitely an improvement that I made.
What do you mean when you say you got a lot better at that?
Well, I had a nice little six by that a lot of people, including myself up until fairly recently, would be just dying to shoot at 7 yards. And he was so close. I could like feel his breath. He was facing me. He was huffing. He was coming up the hill. We were cow calling him in. He was hot and ready, like little Caesars. Yeah. And he was huff in my face. And I was drawn. I always practice drawing on him. Especially, you know, you just see bits and pieces of him coming in. You don't know what he is yet. I draw as soon as I can, because those new bows, you can hold them for forever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I had him dead to rights, less than 10 yards, and I'd let him go, which is pretty crazy for me. I'm typically a cold-blooded killer when it comes to that too. Stuff.
I guarantee you after this podcast, my friend Jeremy will give me a bunch of crap, because he's already giving me crap about that deer hunt, man. He's like, do you think we can make it past day one without you shooting a little fork horn or a little spike? You think we can look for something? So anyway, I've got the same problem, man. I just shoot to kill. And that's it.
I just get so excited, especially with elk. And that's come with having more hunts. Like, I've been fortunate to go on some really good hunts the last couple of years, and it's given me more opportunities to be with elk and close to them and in amongst them. Before that, I was hunting, you know, what you definitely consider bottom tier elk hunts in New Mexico. So if you had an opportunity, you kind of just had to go with it no matter what the bull was. That definitely helped, having two really good elk hunts in a row.
Yeah.
Helped me learn how to judge them a little bit better, to look at that back end. And, you know, that's a good six. You see a good whale tail on him with a nice long fifth, mm-hmm. you know, he's going to be a good bull. Now, that being said, by the time it rolled around for me to kill this bull, I was at the point where I was going to shoot whatever, because I also enjoy the meat a lot.
Yeah.
I process my own. I make sausages and hamburger and steak. You know, I like having that in my freezer, and we're running low from that bull last year. So I was at that point. I'm not beyond shooting a small bull.
Well, I gave you a hard time. I know you posted a picture, texted me a picture or something of a little like raghorn four or something. Mm-hmm. And I said, what was he at, like 40 yards? He was like,
oh yeah,
broadside, dead to rights.
Yep. Yeah.
And I was like, what are you doing? I'd shoot that thing right now. I don't care. But
we were probably there for 10 minutes with that bull.
Right
there.
You said the same thing. And my friend Dan, who had the Gila hunt last year, said, yeah, but it's the Gila. And I don't want to shoot. I don't want to shoot a little bull in the Gila, man, because there's such great bulls out here. So,
And I would go home empty, like on a deer hunt, I'll go home empty handed. I do like have an elk meat in my freezer because it's so much of it. You can do a lot of stuff with it. My wife is like, she'll get mad at me if I don't bring an elk home because she likes having all that burger in the freezer.
Yeah.
But yeah, my dad is the same way. Even though he hasn't killed one with his bow, he wanted a nice bull. He didn't want to just shoot whatever. And so we never did have another good opportunity at a big bull. And what day was that? On Thursday, the 19th. Yeah, I think that was the 19th. Or no, that was the 23rd. My bad, 23rd. My dad had to leave. My mom had bought tickets to see the Eagles like before the pandemic. And that show got moved to the 24th. That was the last day of the elk hunt. Got moved to the 24th. So he had to pack up and go. And he actually went home empty handed, which sucked. And I felt like I failed, you know, because we didn't get him a bull. We got him a shot, but we didn't get another shot, you know.
Yeah.
At least at what he wanted. So that sucked. So he left the afternoon of the 23rd. We were into bulls really, really good that morning. They got ahead of us and we could never catch up to him. But we got back to camp. He packed up. Kevin had left that week and he had to go back and work, and he works shift work at a mine here. So he works graveyards lots of times. So he works from 6 in the evening until 6 in the morning. So he got off that 6 in the morning shift and drove straight to elk camp, 3.5-4 hours. Got in his trailer and went to sleep. And I hung around camp. I could have gone off by myself, but you know, he drove all the way up there, and it's better to have somebody else with you. So I would rather have less time, but have somebody with me to call and to bounce ideas off of. So I waited around. It got to be about 3 o'clock, and I go and I tap on the door of his trailer there. And he's kind of a grumpy dude when he's tired off of those graveyards. I like knock on the door and like back up.
Right.
And, you know, he comes out about a minute later. He's just crusty eyed. And he's like, dude, that's like waking me up at 3 in the morning. Like, I know, but, you know, I'm just making sure you're going out this evening. He's like, oh yeah, I am. Like, just let me get a couple monsters in me or Red Bulls. He's a Red Bull guy. So yeah, Kevin wakes up and we, you know, slowly get him woken up. And my dad, before he left, told me we had to go to this certain spot where we'd go. That's actually where we called in that bull to 7 yards. He's just like, I just have a feeling about it. Like, I think you're going to kill a bull there. There was a big bull bugling up on top of the ridge while that little bull came into us. He's like, you should go right to that spot and find him. I bet he's still there. So we hopped in the side by side, drove all the way over there. It was probably halfway across the unit. It was a long drive. It took us 45 minutes hauling butt on that buggy. We get there, park it, and this was the first day in the whole hunt where it was kind of cool. It had been really hot. No rain. We didn't have any monsoon rain. We didn't have any afternoon thunderstorms. So that could have had something to do with the lack of evening rut fest. So yeah, it had started to cool. It started to cool off. There was a little bit of breeze blowing in. It felt like weather was coming. It kind of smelled like rain. So yeah, we parked there and I walked up this little cut and then across a little ridge and we hit a fence. And right then I was like, oh, well, I'll cow call from this or bugle from this fence. And that way we can decide, you know, if something answers, we need to figure out if we need to be on this side or that side of the fence. So I bugle and this bull just erupts. Like 150, 200 yards in front of us just lets out a nasty, nasty bugle. And we're like, oh crap. And it was right in front of us. The fence was running right straight in front of us. And it was kind of like, which side is he on? I don't know. Like, and really we didn't have enough time to figure that out. He bugled that one nasty one, and then he let out just a little whimpery bugle right after that. And it sounded like he was moving off to the right, but it was kind of open. And I was like, I think this is where it's going to be. Like, he's either going to, you know, walk down this fence line and I'm going to shoot him at 5 yards away, or he's going to be a little bit below me. So I sent Kevin behind me, and Kevin's not an archery guy. He's a long range rifle hunter. And so I'm like, all right, get behind me and start calling. And he starts calling. I turn around. He's like 10 yards behind me, 15 yards, you know,
yeah,
not ideal, but he couldn't move. He was behind a bush that was smaller than him, and he was laying flat on the ground with his facing away from that bull so that the sound was going away. And I'm about to tell him, like, no, move up, move back a little bit further. And I catch movement down there in front of me, and it's probably 200 yards. And sure enough, it's a bull, that light tan hide moving through the trees. And so I just freeze because I know they'll see you. And he moves up and he moves to this little opening. It's 180 yards. I just had my rangefinder cradled in my chest so I could just pick it up real slow and range. And he was 180 yards, and he stopped and watched where we were cow calling for probably 5 minutes.
Wow.
Just dead beat right at me, because Kevin was right in line with me. So he was looking at that sound, but he was also looking right at me because that sound was right behind me.
Yeah.
So he stops, sits there and stares. And I'm just like, holy crap, this isn't going to work. He's going to see us, or he can probably see where that sound's coming from. He's not going to come any closer. But sure enough, he takes like five more steps, does it again, stands there forever, it feels like, and just looks and looks and looks. And he made it all the way up to 80 yards like that. And I can shoot 80 yards, but it's not ideal.
Yeah.
Right. And right when I was about to decide to shoot, I was like, maybe I'm going to have to give this a try. This like little mini hurricane blew in. It all of a sudden it started pouring rain, and the wind was blowing 15, 20 miles an hour, and it was swirling back and forth, and I got soaked. I didn't have any rain gear on, and it was cold, and that bull just stood there in it. And then it was over in like 2 minutes, and when it stopped, he shook all the water off himself and he started walking again. And Kevin would just cow call probably every 30, 45 seconds. He wasn't going crazy. It wasn't like meow, meow, meow. It was just like,
right, meow. Right.
Just little. He did a really good job. And that bull makes his way, and he gets to like 60, and he's covered up in trees. The next shot opportunity he's going to give me is 40. No matter what, it's going to be 40. And he stops one more time at 60 behind those trees. And Kevin, we talked about it later, but he was like, all right, he can see the bull. Kevin can see the bull this whole time. I don't know how this worked. It shouldn't have worked, but it did. And he's like, all right, I'm going to let out like just this sweet, sweet cow call. And he's going to come in. He like, it was wet. So he like wiped it off, puts it in his mouth, and just goes, 40, I guess.
Yeah. One worst of those cow call ever. Right.
You know, when they freeze up on you, they get a little cold or wet or something like that.
Yeah.
And he's like, I did that. And I just went F, like, sweet. And yeah. So we say that, we text that back and forth now. P-H-W-E-E-T-F, you know?
Yeah.
And so believe it or not, that bull kept coming, even though he could see that spot and he heard that really ugly cow call. He came to one little opening that I hadn't realized I could probably shoot through, and he stopped right there. And the pre-planned opening was going to be like 40 even. He's going to be 40 yards perfect broadside. But then he got a bead on me, I think, and it made me a little nervous. And I had already drawn because it felt like he was gonna walk to that good opening I was planning on shooting him in. So I was standing there fully drawn and I was going, dang, like this is kind of tough. I bet I'm gonna have to let down. And I look at it, and in front of me there's a ponderosa, like a younger ponderosa. You know how they have those branches that kind of on the bottom of them, they're dead. Yep. And they droop down. It had two of those, and I could see him between those two branches. It was probably a 20 inches to 2 foot little opening. And I went, well, if what's going to happen is, because this tree's like 10 yards in front of me, like I'm going to let this arrow go, and I'm either going to just lace him, or it's going to hit that branch and it's going to fly somewhere.
Who knows where?
Close, right. Yeah, yeah, right. It's not even going to come close. So I was like, okay. So I'm looking, I'm getting him in my peep sight, and like I can't see him through my peep. I have a hard time getting my right eye and my left eye to decide which one to look through, because I shoot with both eyes open. And I was like, man, this never happens. What the heck? So luckily I was calm enough that I, you know, made myself blink each eye a couple times, and then I had him, and I guessed him at 45. I never did range him, but I figured he was about 45. So I held, you know, 6 inches above the spot I wanted it to go and let it go. And I heard that, you know, smack sound. And I couldn't tell if it was bone, like shoulder, or what. So he runs off, crashes, and there was a pretty good second crash. It sounded like he fell on his face, but I didn't see him. So Kevin runs up. He's like, oh man, did you get him? I'm like, yeah, I got him. I don't know what kind of hit it was. Okay, well, let's just, you know, wait here for 15 minutes and you know, then we'll go look where he was standing, see if we can find the arrow. So we do that. We sit there for a while, and then we walk over and see where he was standing. Luckily that rain had made a little bit of mud, so you could see exactly where he kicked up all that dirt. And you know, I'm looking down, I'm looking in line with where I shot, and I'm like, no, I can't see it right here, at least unless it just zipped right through him, but I bet it didn't. And I look like probably 5 yards in front of me back the way he went after I shot, and there was a broken arrow laying there on the ground. And I was like, oh, this is the moment of truth. Like, we're going to know right now what kind of hit this was. It's the back end. It's the fletching end. And I pick it up, and there's blood touching the fletchings.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right. Yeah, this is good. It's, you know, bright pink blood. Yeah. Like, all right, cool. Okay, well, let's give him a little bit more time. Maybe, you know, we'll just glass from right here. Maybe we could see something down there. And Kevin picks his binoculars up, and he goes, oh man, he's right there. Yeah. And he was 70 yards piled up right there. I can't believe we didn't see him fall. But yeah, we made sure he was down. He wasn't moving anymore. He died probably that second crash we heard. Uh-huh. It was probably 30 seconds after the shot, and he was dead. We went up, and that arrow went right behind his shoulder in that little golden triangle, they like to call it. Yeah. The point of that shoulder. And yeah, he fell right on his face. Didn't last more than a minute probably. So it, yeah, right there. And yeah, we freaked out. That's, I don't know. I'm usually pretty like calm after I kill an animal. I don't have anything against like yelling and hooting and hollering and high fiving and stuff like that. I just don't usually do it. Yeah. But for some reason that one, maybe it was the culmination of 9 or 10 days of just busting it and having a really good tag and striking out, not getting my dad a bull. Like it was a big, big wave of emotion. And yeah, it was really nice. We had a good little celebration there, high fiving and hugging and all that stuff, retelling the story. It was cool. Yeah, that was one I'm not gonna forget. That's what I told Kevin. I could be 90 years old in an old folks home, you know, wearing diapers, and I'll still remember that one.
Yeah, man. And it is a beautiful bull too. The pictures of it are just awesome. And That it is a cool bowl. It is definitely a Gila bowl, that's for sure.
Gila bowl, nice heavy dark horns, antlers, what you know, I call them horns. But what I didn't know when he came in, and like I had said, at this point I was ready to shoot whatever. Like I just wanted to get a bull. I knew he was a 6x. I'd had plenty of time to look at him, but I did not notice he had an extra sword. He had a whole other, 12
inches.
Is that
on his fifth? Is that on his fifth that's split?
It's
like
on
that?
It's on his fourth.
Fourth.
That's cool. Kevin, that's what actually Kevin said that right after I shot. He's like, did you see his extra sword? Did you see it? He called it a trident. Did you see his trident? Like, I said, no, man. I just saw that he was a bull at this point.
Yeah, I just saw the kill shot. That was it.
Yeah. So yeah, he's really nice. We taped him out at like 324. Uh-huh. So he's a good bull.
He is a good bull, definitely. Definitely, man. Gosh, you've had such a good year. I'm so jealous.
I can't believe it. So yeah, August, last weekend of August, I shot that antelope and he was 82 7/8, he almost 83.
Yep.
And then we got that bull, but then my dad killed that really nice 28-inch ram.
Yeah.
And next weekend's deer. So who knows? I have a feeling our luck has run out, but you never know.
Maybe not.
It's been an awesome.
Maybe it runs through the end of the year. That's what you got to hope for.
That's what I'm hoping for. Yeah. For sure. But yeah, it's been a really good year. Unbelievable year. It's weird to have everything come together on three hunts.
Yeah.
Usually you're lucky if it happens once, but.
Well, and your antelope hunt, you were hunting solo, right? So that makes it even a little bit tougher to bring it all together. I mean, antelope, you don't really call them. There's not a lot you can do except for them and go shoot them, but there's still some sneaky factor that goes into that. And
my dad was he rolled into camp at like 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. And I just slept in the back of my truck. And he just rolled up and threw his sleeping bag in the back of his truck. And I had scouted that buck the day before and it had rained a ton and the canyon I had to cross to get to him was flooded like crazy, like wash you away and kill you flood.
Yeah.
And luckily by the time morning rolled around, it had gone down, but yeah, it was, that antelope hunt, as far as antelope hunts go, was not easy.
When I came out to visit or to meet you, you hadn't really seen a whole lot of bucks by that time. And you'd been out there a day and a half, I think.
Yeah.
And I could kind of tell just by talking to you that you were in sort of that, I'm just going to kill whatever I see because I'm not seeing a lot. I think you had one good buck nailed down that you were going to try to chase, right? Something like that.
And I had him pegged at I had him at like 73, 75. Of course, when I killed this buck, I thought he was like 76 or 77. So don't go by me. But it was kind of like that. But rifle antelope hunts in New Mexico, really anywhere you expect to roll up opening morning, and it's kind of like that Gila.
Yeah,
stigma,
you expect
right?
To see like, good bucks, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's getting tougher. We're killing more animals, we have better equipment, people are more efficient. It's not what it used to be, so you just kind of have to adapt, right? So like that antelope hunt, I would rather have hunted for one day. If I had 3 days to hunt, I was going to take 2 days before and scout and find him and then kill him on opening day. Yeah. I'd rather do that than hunt for 3 days. Like I wanted to get there before everybody else did.
Yeah,
find him and shoot him.
That's exactly what I did on mine too. I got there early, found a bunch of good ones and didn't end up shooting any of those good ones. I shot a different one, but.
Well, your buck, cause you brought him. That was so funny. You're like, send me a pin. What's your coordinates?
Yeah. Right. Yep.
So you run. Yeah. Just so everybody knows, Chad ran down there, like had to talk to me, like wanted to give me some info, just wanted to meet me and talk to me. So it was just kind of cool. Ran down there. We swapped stories. He had already killed his buck. And I don't know if we can talk about that, but
for sure.
But I pulled him out of the ice chest. big old massive thing. You couldn't even reach your hands around him. He was, he was cool.
Yeah. Such he's a cool buck, dude. Super cool. I can't wait to get him back. You're getting your shoulder mounted too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, so I've drawn two rifle tags in my life. This is where everybody's going to laugh because you drew it on your first one, but I drew that first tag when I was 12, the first time I ever applied. Yeah. And I'm 32 now. That's how long it's taken me to draw a rifle.
Yeah, I'm a little bummed out about that. Now I've figured I'll probably never draw another one again, at least for a rifle. But
it's possible, but you never know. Yeah. You know,
especially my brother, that unit I was in, I'll never draw another one of those.
Oh yeah, that's premier stuff where you were at.
Yeah,
and mine was too, just more tags. So
I think that's what it was. Yeah, but anyway. Dude, you're having a great year, man. I wish you the best of luck on your deer hunt and both deer hunts, right? You got a couple coming up.
Yeah, I'm gonna hunt for a day here and then go to Colorado and
and
hopefully do some good. That
well, I hope so, man.
I blew a few points in Colorado on a, you know, they moved all those season dates back. So it's second season, but it's like third season historical dates.
Yeah.
So they could be rutting a little bit, should be good. But yeah, and you're coming down this way for yours.
Yep.
This weekend.
Yep. I'll be down there. Yeah. Real soon, man. Real soon.
Yeah. I think you're going to. I already
this
called
week
it.
In Denver behind me, dude. And you know what you said? I think it was, I should have had it memorized. It was like 328 yards or something.
Yeah. I was just being obnoxious, like being super specific. But I bet it's going to be something like that. It's going to be in the range.
I hope so. But yeah, it was funny. My buddy Jeremy was like, just please don't shoot something on the first day, unless it's like a big, you know, great big monster or something.
Oh, yeah.
But he knows how I am, dude. I'm always like, let's just shoot that one. And then we'll, you know, whatever. We'll go eat backstrap and hang out at camp and call it good.
Well, there's a, you know, I'm not against that at all. Like there's a time and a place for both, you know, like, you know,
I'm looking for something good out there. And
I think we'll find them too.
Yeah, we'll find them.
You're going to have a really good hunt.
They're out there. We'll see. But anyway, brother, I really appreciate you sharing your story and coming on. Where do people find you? Find more pictures of that great bull and that antelope and all that stuff. What's your Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff, if you got Facebook?
Well, I got rid of Facebook, so I'm not hardly on it anymore. I'm pretty much all my hunting stuff is on Instagram, and my handle is The Real Bearded Hunter. So
yeah,
it's kind of hard to forget, kind of lame, but you won't forget it.
Nope, and I'll tag you in all the stuff below. And like I said, I really appreciate you sharing your story, dude, and coming on and talking.
Well, thanks for having me.
It took us a few times to get it nailed down, but we got it.
Well, just so everybody knows, it was mostly me. It was hard to nail me down.
Well, you're busy. And you know what? A lot of that was that antelope hunt, and then it was the Barbary sheep hunt, and just getting together is tricky during hunting season. So I really always appreciate guys taking time out and talking to me. But all right, dude, The Real Bearded Hunter on Instagram, Jordan Staley. Really appreciate you coming on, dude. Thank you.
No, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Anytime.
Thank you for listening to the Backcountry Rookies podcast. Don't forget to look us up on social media. We are Backcountry Rookies on all the spots, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. And we also have the Backcountry Rookies Nation, which is a private group on Facebook. So thanks to Go Hunt, Elk 101, Vortex Optics, and Canyon Coolers for sponsoring the show. Remember, when you use the code ROOKIES, get special deals at all of those companies. You get $50 in gear shop credit when you become a Go Hunt Insider. You save $20 on the University of Elk Hunting from Elk 101, 20% off any Vortex apparel. And now you can save 10% off Canyon Coolers. Just use the code ROOKIES at any of those places and get special deals. Thanks for listening. Come back next week. Out of here.